This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. Brought to you by Cornell University's Turfgrass Program in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association. My name is Frank Rossi. I'm the Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University. And the following are observations and recommendations for the week of July 11th, 2011. The stress of the summer is in full force these days, with either too much rain in some areas of eastern New York or too little for much of the rest of the region. Expect more turf areas without irrigation to enter dormancy, and if irrigation is available, be sure to monitor uniformity and amount to avoid creating new problems. Persistent issues with stress on golf turf from diseases such as Pythium and anthracnose breakthrough due to intense culture stress and less than optimum spray programs. It's time to watch mowing and irrigation programs now more than ever on golf putting surfaces. New information on establishing a sports turf seed bank from Iowa State University. And finally, growing concern but not alarm over giant hogweed infestations due to the serious skin problems associated with contact. Randy Prostak provides his usual sage advice for proper management and, most importantly, contain the spread by preventing seed dispersal. The weather information, it was a mostly normal week across the region with most within a degree of normal. However, that this time of year, normal temperatures often lead to heat stress, especially with warm evening temps. Weekly growing degree day accumulations average between 200 to the south and 125 to the north. We remain about 7 days behind last year's record heat, or about 200 growing degree days, and about 7 to 10 days ahead of the 15-year average. Soils in the low 70s to the north and low 80s to the south at the 2-inch depth. Region-wide, it's been fairly dry, except for a swath through northern New Jersey, Catskills, and eastern New York. A 1 to 2 inch area with some areas receiving 2 to 3 inches. Most of the rest of the region, less than a half an inch. ET value still almost a quarter inch of water loss per day, or 1 to 1.5 inches of water loss per week. Dollar spot and foliar anthracnose risks will be high region-wide for the entire week. Pythium pressure will be high early in the week, then weaken, and brown patch will be low, then build as the week progresses. The lack of rainfall is keeping some things in check. However, overwatering and higher evening temps will lead to more disease issues as the summer progresses. And the forecast for the coming week looks like more of the same coming this week, with warmer than normal temps in the mid-80s to mid-90s and 60s to 70s for lows. Widespread heat stress expected with above normal evening temps. Hit and miss showers for the week with no more than a quarter to half an inch of rain region-wide. Long-term models continue to call for warm and dry conditions for the 8 to 14-day outlook, and you can check out all the weather maps, weed, irrigation, growth, and disease models at our forecast website. The Cornell Cooperative Extension Update begins in western New York with Walt Nelson. Many turf areas are actively moving into dormancy in the absence of significant rainfall. This has made the broadleaf weed stand out even more, especially the clover, reports of Japanese beetle and European chafer adults. The Westchester report from Jared Giordano and Rick Harper. Spotty downpours have not stopped turf from drying out on hillsides and in areas where soil has not been properly amended. One landscaper called to report a newly seeded area that did sprout, but lack of adequate irrigation and sowing seed under the July sun likely killed sprouting seeds before the sprouting was visible. Reports to the lab involved the lawn almost completely converted to moss due to compaction and shade. Some red thread and incidences of dollar spot were seen in local lawns, as well as the first chintz bug sightings. The Capital District report from Dave Chinnery. The first report of chintz bugs for the year. Unlike many areas, we are receiving some regular rainfall that is keeping the turf actively growing and green. The DEC reported hogweed in the area while labeled an invasive plant. Small plantings still seem to be manageable. And the Eastern Long Island report from Tom Kowalsik. The lab has been slow from a turf perspective, with some bent grass from lawns coming in on the decline. Some persistent herbicide injury not thought to be in prelis, an actual need for irrigation of home lawns appears to be needed, while sod farms are still doing okay. The Adirondack report from Emily Selleck. A recent sighting of giant hogweed has created quite a stir. We've heard back from Naja Krause, Forest Health and Protection Program Botanist, Giant Hogweed Program Coordinator for the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, Division of Lands and Forests in New Paltz, New York. She, quote, Before everyone gets really worried, I just want to reassure that a small infestation can be easily eradicated in a few years. It takes at least 3 to 4 years for each of these younger plants to get enough energy in their roots to bolt and create a flower, so we have time to control them and keep this site in Essex, New York, from getting any larger. The main thing we want to do from now on is to make sure heads should be bagged and proper, and no more seed is shed. So all flower heads should be bagged and properly disposed of, and the control of the smaller plants can be done this year and or early next year. I'm available to advise on best methods. Naja is part of the DEC Hogweed Hotline, whose phone has been ringing off the hook. Information on control methods and safety precautions can also be found on their website, www.dec.newyork.gov/animals/40961.html. And the weed update from Randy Prostak, University of Massachusetts Amherst. Broadleaf weed control. As mentioned in the CCE updates, broadleaf weeds remain actively growing when the cool season grasses begin to enter dormancy with high ET and low rainfall and no irrigation. We're now past the time when applying a post-emergent broadleaf weed control product could be recommended, especially not the ester formulation that is prone to volatilization, vapor drift. It is time to live with the weeds for now and be prepared to take action in the late summer, early fall. Information about hogweed, and a really nice picture of hogweed exists in the printed version of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut. Giant hogweed, Heraclium mantigasianum, is a federally listed noxious weed. Its sap, in combination with moisture and sunlight, can cause severe skin and eye irritation, painful blistering, permanent scarring, and blindness. Contact between the skin and the sap of this plant occurs either through brushing against the bristles on the stem or breaking the stem or leaves. Giant hogweed can be controlled manually, mechanically, and with herbicides. In some cases, a giant hogweed infestation is best controlled using several different methods in combination or in succession. In other words, a 2-, 3-, or even 4-pronged attack plan. The final part to any control method is to plant grasses or other vegetation to provide competition for giant hogweed and decrease soil erosion. In order for your control efforts to be successful, you have to ensure that no additional seeds are being introduced to the area. With no influx of seed and a few years of persistent control efforts, giant hogweed plants can be eradicated. 1. Prevent introduction into new areas. 2. Do not move soil contaminated with seed. If removal of contaminated soil is necessary, seedling emergence can be prevented by burying the soil to a minimum depth of 20 inches and covering it with clean soil. 3. Sowing and planting giant hogweed is prohibited. 4. Since the dispersal of giant hogweed is almost entirely by seed, it is very important to prevent the plant from setting seed. 5. Control new smaller infestations first before the seed bank has a chance to establish. Giant hogweed is susceptible to systemic herbicides such as glyphosate and triclopyr. The application of these herbicides is considered effective and cost-efficient and can be used for the control of a single plant or large stands of giant hogweed. These systemic herbicides will be absorbed by the leaves and will move into the root to prevent regrowth the following year. Triclopyr is a selective herbicide that acts only on broadleaf plants and will not harm grasses in the area. Glyphosate is non-persistent in the soil, but is also a non-selective herbicide and will kill any surrounding vegetation it comes in contact with. Some triclopyr and glyphosate products, example Rodeo, are labeled for use in riparian areas and near water. Areas sprayed with triclopyr can recolonize with grasses and other herbaceous species within the same growing season, which helps to suppress giant hogweed seedling growth and decrease soil erosion. Recolonization at sites using glyphosate will probably be slower than sites using triclopyr unless reseeded. Spraying giant hogweed leaves with an herbicide containing triclopyr or glyphosate as the active ingredient. Use the recommended manufacturer's dose and follow label directions. There's no advantage to using a higher dose. Apply the herbicide between March and early June when hogweed leaves are green and actively growing. A follow-up treatment in July or August may be needed for the plants that did not die from the first herbicide application. Diagnostic update from Rich Buckley, Rutgers University. Begins with a compromised roots. As the summer heats up, we are starting a real separation between annual bluegrass and creeping bentgrass with regard to rooting and overall stress tolerance. This has been especially noticeable for turf areas under heavy regulation from Trimet or Cutlass outside of New York, where the annual bluegrass becomes more regulated than the creeping bentgrass. anthracnose. While the epidemic levels of basal rot anthracnose are not as they were just 5 years ago due to the research at Rutgers, there are still times when stress levels go up. Cultural management programs remain at high intensity, and control programs, even when properly rotated, get some breakthrough. Be sure to have spray intervals tight during these times, and consider mowing and moisture stress issues, as studies have shown there can be hitting stress from drying greens out and scalping the turf. And finally, my gazing in the grass update. Sports turf seed banking. A recent study conducted at Iowa State University investigated if Kentucky bluegrass or perennial ryegrass seed applied prior to traffic and during traffic in the fall persists over time and contributes to turf grass density. The study concluded that most seed, 90%, germinated immediately and did not remain viable after a few weeks. The best approach to using a seed bank in the field is to seed heavy prior to the beginning of traffic in the fall, followed up by some additional seeding during the traffic period. However, this was only true for perennial ryegrass, and Kentucky bluegrass did not benefit from continued seeding during traffic. Golf course revenue and conditioning. A recent National Golf Foundation study on public golf found that 37% of public courses have had to lower their course maintenance standards, and 71% have had to defer capital expenditures in recent years due to financial considerations. Low-end public courses saw a 1.8% drop in revenue and lowered their maintenance budget by 2.9%. And high-end clubs had a 2.9% drop in revenue and a 3.5% drop in maintenance cost. National Golf Foundation followed up and asked core golfers, the ones who play more than 20 times per year, if they noticed a lowering of standards. The results were that 25% noticed conditions had deteriorated, and oddly, 21% thought conditions improved. It appears golfers are more accepting of lower standards given the severity of the recession, as golfers themselves admitting to cutting back on spending per round. And finally, a note about irrigation. Right about this time of year last year, there was an obvious increase in problems related to dry conditions and poor irrigation. After a few weeks of intense ET and increased reliance on supplemental irrigation, the soil water reserve has been depleted so that most plants are now dependent on irrigation water with no meaningful rain in sight. As a result, weaknesses in your irrigation system will be exposed either due to inability to apply water uniformly, scheduling, or poor operating issues such as pressure. Regardless of the issue, if you are under or over applying water during the stressful periods and unaware of your issues, you will mistake disease or abiotic stress issues for what was at the core, poor irrigation practices. Now is the time to get a handle on your water by monitoring soil moisture with a Field Scout 300 TDR probe or other soil moisture measuring device. Maybe even put out a few collection cups in problem areas to see if the water is being applied where you want it. Now is not the time to eyeball it or water by feel. Thank you for joining me for the weekly installment of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. I'm Frank Rossi, the Associate Professor of Turfgrass Science in the Department of Horticulture here at Cornell University, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.